Welcome to the Sexual Mindfulness Project podcast, where we talk about creating an intentional relationship and how to find joy in slowing down, letting go of judgment, and connecting more deeply with your partner.
Well, Dan, I am really happy to have you here today. You were kind enough to host me on your podcast, and I think that this opportunity to learn from you is really going to be a treat. So thank you for being here.
Thank you. It's an honor.
I would like to start off by maybe you will just tell us generally what your background is and what led you to starting this wonderful podcast that you have on Get Your Marriage On.
Oh, thank you. So my wife and I have been married almost 18 years. We live in St. George, Utah, and we have 6 kids. We met in middle school on the school bus because we live kind of close to each other. But she was always like 2 or 3 social classes above me, and I was really shy. So, but we did.
I love these stories of young romance that actually come to fruition.
I always liked her and admired her from a distance, but I never thought myself ever like being good enough for her. But missions change things. I served a mission and has been really blessed from so many wonderful events that happened as a young adult. Good mentors, good friends, and also we both come from good families. So when we reconnected, you know, later on, we just had this built-in friendship. And so that friendship blossomed into romance, and then we've been married. And I gotta say, I feel very fortunate because we've had a really good marriage. For us, in our relationship, talking about sexuality wasn't always comfortable, hasn't been comfortable for a long time. And I think a lot of it might be due to upbringing. Although we both come from good families, discussions around sex were always in the thou shalt not category and not the pleasure and the how to build a great sex life. So we had a good understanding of the mechanics, but we didn't have a really good understanding of what it could mean for us. And I remember being really shy about my sexuality, like, because I was really naive, like my body would function in certain ways and I didn't understand it. For instance, after all the musical lyrics talk about all night long, like you'll be able to last all night long. And I don't. So I thought there's something wrong with me and my body.
Nope. I think you're actually very normal.
Exactly.
We have these misconceptions because of songs.
Yeah, I had a lot of misconceptions, but also a lot of discomfort around seeking answers because it felt like such a taboo topic. I also understand the dangers of pornography. So in my mind, anything that was seeking out sexual education for me as a now newlywed and where's a line for pornography, I did not understand that line very well. So because I didn't understand it and I didn't want to risk anything, I just stayed on the quote unquote safe side and didn't really, I just shoved my questions aside and went on.
Right. It's almost like we're afraid to get educated on this topic.
Yeah.
We don't know what sources are safe.
Yes, exactly. It'd be kind of akin to like not going on an expedition because you don't know what you might run into. You could take the time to research what you might run into and become more prepared. So you know like what vegetables or plants are okay to eat or not, or what kind of terrain you might run into. So how to clothe properly to prepare for that, or just not take the expedition. So
right.
I was in the not take the expedition camp.
Good example.
Until about just after 13 years in our marriage, this was like a magical time in our marriage because our oldest was old enough to watch the kids. So Emily and I could have a regular date night, which did a lot of good for our marriage all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. And my job changed and I had a little more free time. So I was home more, I was helping out more. And during this time, I had a conversation with a friend and he opened up about his sex life to me. And it was one of those paradigm shifting conversations for me because he was talking about how to make his wife orgasm and these different sexual techniques and positions. And I was blushing the whole conversation. I was so uncomfortable about it, but more than that, I was uncomfortable that I was uncomfortable about it. So I went home to Emily and like, hey, I had this conversation with this friend and it's really got me self-conscious about our sex life. Are you satisfied? Am I a good enough lover for you? Like, how are we doing? And that was really probably the first deep conversation we had in our marriage. about our sex life.
I love that you were so aware of your discomfort and you knew that it was a problem. You didn't automatically say, oh, this is a taboo topic. And now I feel ashamed that I've had this conversation. Instead, you really learned from that.
Yes. And I think it's partially because my friend was sincere. It wasn't like locker room talk or anything like that. He was just saying, these are things that are great for my marriage. And I'm just so excited about it. I want to tell you about it too. So that was probably our first realization that, you know, and these conversations with my wife just went on for hours and hours, deep into the night, into the early morning hours, night after night for a few weeks. Like, we're just uncovering layer after layer after layer. And we both realized there's a lot we need to learn. So not knowing really where to turn, we tried a few things. So one is we felt comfortable about turning to books. And after a little bit of Google searching, we found some fantastic resources that were in line with our values. So we started reading some books together. In fact, we read about 12 books together in the next year. So we kind of really nerded out on books. We found podcasts. We found blogs with really good, helpful information. And so it kind of really helped us realize there's so much good to having a great sex life. And we started practicing these things in our own marriage. And all of a sudden, our marriage went from good to like really, really great and really fun. We're flirting more. All those Twitter-pated feelings we had when we were dating early on came back in full force. And we're communicating better. And everything else in life seemed to click better. Like, work is going better. Our kids seem to be getting along better. Just, it was like infusing our relationship with new life. And it was really good.
Yeah. I mean, I think so often we don't really tap into the fact that sex is powerful. And I know that, you know, if people are looking at what the Bible teaches, you know, it talks about that we're supposed to multiply and replenish the earth. And that's kind of the main focus of sex for a lot of people. But I think that those words are actually pretty powerful. I don't think that replenish just means have children. It means replenish the energy within the marriage, replenish my individual energy. And like you're saying, I think that spills over into how creative we feel at work and how well our whole family gets along. I love that that's exactly what happened for you.
Absolutely. And I wish I knew about this sooner. So my background's in software development. I have a degree in computer science. I run a software development company. We build apps for all kinds of businesses. So I thought an app would be great for this. One aspect about lovemaking that helped me was to make lovemaking more playful and fun, more like a game than it is like something so serious. So kind of bringing out the goofy side of me or the creative side of me or us, I should say. And it's like adult play. So we thought maybe if we made a game, that would be fun. So you look on the App Store and there are sex games on the App Store, but they're all crass and raunchy. And it just felt like they came right out of Las Vegas for us. Like really not our type of thing that I would be proud to have installed on my phone. So we thought, well, maybe we could make something that's really clean and direct, but not lame at all. And just kind of a different take, but making sex fun. So I made an app, put it on the App Store, and to our surprise, it really took off. Because I think a lot of people were like us, looking for something fun, a resource to strengthen the intimacy of our marriage, but not being on the crass or raunchy side.
Yeah, so why do you think it is so important to spice up your sex life and, you know, even spilling over into just your day-to-day marriage? Why is that important?
Oh, I think several reasons. One is just naturally our brains crave novelty. We like new outfits. We like new cars. Sometimes you get sick of our job and just quit just to get a new job. Or we move, we get a new house. We just like new things and new foods. Who wants to eat the same meal every day for the rest of their life? Well, some people might, but generally, like we like freshness. And when you can infuse freshness into your relationship, see your spouse in a new light, learn new things about them, it makes that person that you're living with three-dimensional, gives more like depth to who they are. But it's not always easy too, because part of intimately knowing someone at a really deep level requires you to be vulnerable too. And so I think spicing things up is healthy because it helps you stay vulnerable. It helps you stay humble, helps you stay in this like learning, playful, want to know you state. And I think that's vital to have that, that strong bond stay in that relationship long-term.
Right. So I think what you're describing is this tension between, we want to stay married, right? We don't want to give up our relationship and go get a new relationship like we might with cars or a house. We want to stay in this relationship. So exactly what you're saying reminds me of what a therapist, Esther Perel, says, that to create intimacy, you have to be vulnerable. You have to disclose something new about yourself, see your partner in a new way, or even see yourself in a new way. And that's just what you're describing. I really think that's so important.
Yes. And building on what Esther Perel teaches there, it doesn't have to be, you know, new lingerie or sex toys. I mean, it could, but it could just be as simple as, you know, if you normally don't see your spouse at work and they're going to give a work presentation, go see them at work, giving the work presentation. You'll see them in a new light in their professional setting that you normally don't see them. Things like that will like give you newfound appreciation for who they are. And that's novelty too.
Yeah, no, that's a great suggestion. So I would suggest that any listeners go and peruse this website that you've created that has podcasts and blogs and just a whole host of great ideas for how to really spice up your marriage. Stay in your committed, loving relationship, but keep it vibrant. That's really nice. So because you do this podcast and you get to visit with so many people who are giving a little summary of their area of expertise, maybe you would share with us what some of the best suggestions or advice that you've heard from guests that you've had on your podcast.
Oh, wow. There's been so many. Like every guest, I'm like, oh, I'm a little selfish in what I do because I'm very curious and have lots of questions. Maybe I can share three things lately that I've learned that's helped me in our relationship from the guests I've interviewed and talked to. One is just understanding anatomy really well, like how our bodies work. And that can get really deep. So you can understand how your body functions really well and understand how your spouse's body functions really well. But like, play with it, experiment, try new things. Like, do you like when I tickle with a feather, or do you like something a little gentle, or do you like something a little rough here? And it doesn't have to be just the genitals. There's other parts of our bodies, like our neck and our face and our hair and crook of our elbow and the back of our knees and other parts of our body that might seem a little more taboo, like the anal area. And, you know, other parts of our body can give us intense pleasure when we're in the right aroused state. So we can experiment with those things and different types of touches. And there's a lot of layers and complexity and things we can explore. So understanding our anatomy, and that could be something that's an ongoing learning. That's really exciting.
And it is kind of surprising how often people aren't aware of the particulars of their anatomy. Maybe they felt like that was, you know, dirty or shameful. And so they haven't explored what it is that they prefer and where and how they like to be touched. A great, great suggestion.
Yeah. A great analogy for that is like someone handing you the latest iPhone, and all it's good for is for making phone calls, when it's good for many, many other applications too. So
right,
you can learn more about how your body works. Another thing that's helped is just relationship dynamics in general, and how understanding how the relationship as a whole, it has to be healthy to have really good sex, and how good sex also helps keep the relationship healthy too. So there's that cycle. For instance, the importance of kind of being humble with regards to, let's say there's desire discrepancies in a relationship. Oftentimes pride can get in the way, where you view yourself, maybe the higher desire spouse starts using language like, you're the problem. You need to fix this. And the message the lower desire partner is receiving is, I'm not good enough for you. I'm not good enough sexually for you. And when that is the main message that's received, when there's desire discrepancies, that really harms the ability to really be intimate and connect. Because who would want to have sex with someone when all they feel like in the whole time is like, I'm not good enough for him, or I'm not good enough for her. And if that's the kind of the record that's playing over and over, that doesn't help you draw closer together. So it takes quite a bit of effort on both people's part to create a marriage relationship where you're both treated each other as equals and you work together as an intimate team to create the kind of love life you both want. But that's going to take a lot of sacrifice and an incredible amount of patience on both people's parties. For instance, I coach men, and one of the men I coached lately on the brink of divorce, frustrated with his wife because she won't go to counseling. He's saying things like she won't do the very thing that will fix our marriage, and she won't step up and try new things in the bedroom, and she won't desire him. And here's what's going on. And every single problem in their relationship was always her problem, instead of him taking a moment to look at like how he's contributing to the issue. And she might have some hangups. They might be legitimate, but she also might have some very legitimate reasons why she doesn't want to be intimate with him, because probably the way he's treating her too. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times we need to kind of hold up a mirror to ourselves. And sometimes a friend or a trusted friend or a therapist can also help you see your own blind spots that you don't see, to help you really get deep. And like, you kind of need to have that broken heart, contrite spirit type of an attitude with your spouse to build this relationship that you both can really like, really be happy about. And besides, when you're best friends, when you can giggle and laugh together or share deep, dark secrets to each other without too much fear of like being rejected about that, or having someone kind of at your side, I think those are the types of relationships so you can really build a great sex life with too.
Yeah, that's great advice. And yet that is probably one of the hardest things for couples to really master, is looking at yourself and seeing what your part in whatever the roadblock is, owning this together. It's hard, but actually it's that very thing that can create intimacy.
Yes.
I love that.
And I believe the very best sex is intimate sex.
You're right. You're right. Where you're both being very vulnerable.
And speaking of which, even in the very act, there's some things you can do to kind of up the vulnerability and intimacy, like eye contact, for instance, maintaining eye contact while making love and being really present with the person. And you talk a lot about this too, but if you can be with that, being with the person you love the most, and in that very moment, like breathe them in with your eyes open and look them in the face and just really adore them, appreciate them, cherish them.
Yeah.
My wife and I went to a marriage retreat earlier this summer, taught by a PhD marriage therapist, great guy. He had us do this exercise. So we're all sitting in this like hotel ballroom, and he's like, okay, one of you is going to be the giver and the receiver. And the giver's job was just to touch the other person. Nothing inappropriate, just like shoulders, arms, hands. But while you touch, he had us, as you touch, think loving thoughts about the person you're touching, like how you adore them, cherish them. What are the things you've gone through together? What are the challenges you've overcome together? Like, what makes this person worth loving, to do that kind of a touch? And then partway through, he said, don't stop touching, keep touching, but I want you to think about like Monday and what work you're going to return to, yeah, or the kids. And then it was the receiver's job to see if they can tell a difference in the type of touch. Even though the motions were the same, there was a huge difference in the perception of what that touch was. It felt more cold, more rigid, where the former felt more warm and connecting. And that taught me a great lesson, even in the act of making love, like our approach and our thoughts and the feeling we put behind, it might be the exact same motion. It might be the exact same, you know, movements and type of touch, but there's a big difference between rubbing and feeling, I guess.
Yeah,
you can rub someone, or you can actually feel them, or to express feeling towards them.
Yeah. I love the phrase that you used, breathe in your partner. I think that's not just figurative, right? I mean, as we breathe, like we smell them, we kind of start to feel present with this person that we cherish, that we adore. And, you know, not only the smell, but the touch and the feel of being with them can remind us of our journey that brought us to this point, and we can really appreciate so many more things about them. I think that's such a nice image. And I think that your example of touching with intention is a really important reminder about being present. It changes the whole experience, doesn't it?
Yep, definitely.
So I want to switch gears a little bit and let's talk about just marriages in general. Because you've been doing this for so long, you've kind of gotten a sense of what the experts out there are saying and certainly what you're hearing from people as far as their questions. I wonder if marriages today might be more fragile than marriages, say, when our parents were, you know, young married folks. Do you think that there's some truth to that? A lot of people talk about today being, you know, much more challenging to keep a marriage together. What are your thoughts about that?
I don't know. I think if I were my ancestors 150 years ago, settling, a really barren land and constant threat for starvation and invasion, I think that'd be really hard on my marriage compared to today. So in some respects, I think marriages are more equipped today than they are ever. A wise therapist friend told me that I believe is true. I think people getting married today have much higher expectations for their marriage than they did generations ago. In other words, they look to their spouse as filling more of their emotional needs than generations ago. Like, we now look to our spouse not only to be our life partner, but also our friend, to be our emotional support, to be our economic partner too, to, like, of course, sexual partner. Like, we expect a whole lot out of our spouses today than before. So if your expectations are very high, then of course you're going to feel like my marriage is more fragile because you set your expectations so high. Mm-hmm. So it might be wise to reevaluate really what do I really expect out of my spouse and what would be good. So a healthy set of expectations, I think, will probably help. But our marriage is more fragile. In many ways, it's a two-edged sword because we're blessed in an era with incredible information and media and movies and pundits and opinions. It's so easy to get good information and good opinions, but it's also easy to be influenced by maybe some things that will detract or pull us away. One of the pernicious things is doubt. Doubt's kind of like the Bermuda grass weed in my lawn that I just can't get rid of. It like invades and it stays in and kind of takes over. When we get a lot of doubt about our relationship and our marriage, it kind of can take over. So we got to be careful about what we put into our mind and also our self-talk. So we need to watch ourselves and our thoughts and our words and our actions, I think, in that order. When we're careful about our self-talk, like, I'm good enough. I'm a great spouse. I know how to be a good spouse. I'm good enough for this person. I'm the best husband my wife needs right now. Like, yeah. And you can really believe that. Then I think that's a good key to, like, set and align things in the right alignment so you're better equipped, so your marriage doesn't feel as fragile. There are going to be voices out there that talk about commitment's overrated, or they disregard the need for, like, chastity before marriage and fidelity after marriage, or just the need for marriage alone, or some sort of a shame for maybe choosing to, maybe one spouse not pursuing a full career and staying home with the children. You're going to see voices like that, or the opposite too, like shame for pursuing a career when that's what you really want to do and you feel that's right for you instead of being home with the kids, or what other voices say too. So that's a very long-winded answer and a lot of rambling.
I think you hit every major point that any expert would talk about. I just appreciate that you bring up this notion of maybe unrealistic expectations. So maybe do a little self-evaluation and see if what you're expecting from your marriage is unattainable. And so, of course, you're going to be unhappy if your expectations can't ever be reached. And I think part of what might contribute to that, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, but what might contribute to that is this inundation of social media, of comparisons with everybody. And of course, we're comparing our everyday life with their perfect moment that's, you know, touched up. And I think that we got to be realistic about what's going on.
Absolutely. So you need to kind of control that influence.
Yeah, And which is one of the points you brought up. So kind of control your environment, control your own expectations and self-talk. Those are all great suggestions. Thank you. Another little shift. What do you think about when children come into the marriage? You know, it's one thing to be married and to be trying to put a good relationship together with work and school or whatever the competing interests are. But then we add in children, and we may even add in one or two, or in your case, six, right? In my case, nine. And it's like, what were we thinking? And how do we deal with these little creatures that we love and we want to give them everything they need, but we also need to maintain a good, strong marriage relationship? How do we do that, Dan?
Yeah, I read a study by John Gottman. He studied marital satisfaction before and after children. And it's true, marital satisfaction goes down after children come, especially 3 to 4 years into having children. But if you can stick through it and after the children grow up and leave the nest, marital satisfaction goes way up after. So it's not like doom. It's not like it's the end. So that gave me a lot of comfort. Like, oh, it's season of life. And if we can stick through this, it's good. But then again, I this is not scientific study, but this is just in my head. Of those that marriages that have children and thrive, there's like maybe a third of them that are like, things are really bad now that we have kids. I can't adapt. It's usually the husband generally, because the mother goes through such a huge transformation in her mind and in her body after having a child. It's like so important to her to raise her children. And if he's not on board with that, then he's like married to a different person now. She's changed and he's not going to adapt to that. Then you have that third that where marriage is going to be really difficult. And then you have a middle third where they'll get through it and be okay. And then you have the top third that actually grow closer together and children become a great blessing and a stepping stone to strengthening their marriage. And I think the difference comes down to the ability to adapt to that circumstance. So being willing to kind of be present and see this is what it is. This is our reality. We've made this decision to raise children and we're committed to work together to raise our children well. That can actually be a stepping stone to strengthen the marriage. But while you're in the slog of all this, it's still super important that you take time regularly to be a couple and not to be parents. And you don't have to act your age as you know. You can go do fun stuff that you used to like to do all the time or try new things. And I think couples that still make time to regularly date, whether it's just a stay-home date or whatever, to like disconnect from parent mode for a little while and just be lovers once in a while. It's like a huge infusion of life back into that relationship. But sometimes parents don't do that. And I get it. It is so discouraging after the eighth call of and can't find a babysitter. Like I've got eight no's in a row and it is really discouraging. Or it's like the universe conspires against you. Finally, when you think you have a moment together, you know, you're like undressing, you're like really hot and ready. And then a knock at the door comes.
That's right.
Like, it's just, it can be so aggravating. And that's, and then you're so discouraged and you're like, what did I even get aroused for? Like it can be really upsetting.
Yeah. So, it's important for us to take off that parent hat and put on the lover hat and remind ourselves that this is still who we are. And we still have this beautiful connection with our spouse.
So keep up the flirting. Keep up the things that endear you to each other. Keep up the dating, the love letters, the messages, or whatever it is that your spouse and you really like to do together. And be together.
That's great advice.
And that's a great gift you can give your children when mom and dad are together.
Yeah, you know, that's a really important point. Our children are watching us. And if our relationship goes stale, they notice that too. Or more importantly, they don't notice the flirting and the hand holding and the hugs. And I think those are really important messages to send our children. They feel more secure in a family where mom and dad, you know, sometimes can't keep their hands off each other. And that's a really important message to give our kids.
That reminds me, the other night, My wife and I were just having a great makeout session on the couch. And our teenage kid walks in, surprised, nothing inappropriate. We're just really enjoying being together. And I was kind of glad he walked in on that, you know, yeah. In the living room. We thought they were all to bed, but I think us, or more so my wife, I give her the credit for that. Taking the steps to show affection, that action sends such a stronger message to our kids than sitting them on the couch and giving them a lecture about, about, you know, happy marriages would ever be.
Yeah. So. They're getting the lecture every day, but it's wordless. It's just by what you guys are doing. That's fantastic. I have to make a plug for kids, though. I know a lot of people really focus on the idea that, you know, satisfaction goes down or playfulness goes down when you have children. And that's really understandable. Like you said, in those first, you know, from the time they're born to about 5 years old, because it's so labor intensive to raise a child. But then it starts to ease up, right, when they're a little bit older. And I have to say, I don't think scientists are getting the whole picture. I think that there are added satisfactions that we are not measuring. So maybe marital satisfaction goes down a little, but you know what? Parental satisfaction skyrockets. And I think there are a lot of wonderful elements of parenting that can actually enhance your marriage. I know that that's true. And I probably put myself in that last third category you described, where parenting really enhanced our marriage. I felt like we learned about each other in a way that never would have come up had we not had children. And we were both so independent that having children really brought us together and gave us a new purpose and common interest. So I loved it.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because like I read online, I hear people saying, we're afraid to have kids because what it'll do to our marriage, to our relationship. So the delay having kids.
Yeah.
But if they can understand like what you just said, it will add so much more depth. Like your marriage satisfaction isn't the be all end all measure of happiness in life.
Right.
There's parental happiness. There's like life purpose. There's so much more that comes with, you know, having a family and children.
Well, okay. One last topic I really want to cover with you is that you mentioned earlier, you coach men. You talk about helping men develop more intimacy in their marriages. Do you think that men maybe struggle a little more than women to achieve that? And what sorts of advice might you give men who are struggling with intimacy?
I wouldn't say they struggle more or less. I think it's just that their struggles are different. So the primary men I work with are men who are in otherwise happy marriages, but wish things were better in the intimacy department. So these are usually the higher desire husband and trying to figure out why or what they can do. This is what they think, right? They think, what do I need to say? What do I need to do to get her to have sex with me more often?
Yeah. That's, how can I turn that switch
on? Yes. Where is it? Where's the knob? What's it take? Tell me. And it's a very complex question because relationships can get really complex. But if you were to really simplify it, I would say if you wanted to cut the Gordian knot, it would be to focus on you and what you are doing and what you can do and do better at, and let her focus on her and let her on what she can do and do better at, and not be so outcome oriented. So a lot of times when we are so outcome oriented, like our brains will tend to think like worst case scenario if we let it. Oh no, I'd hate to have a divorce because then I have, you know, child support and alimony and like it's just financial ruin plus co-parenting. Like, why are we even talking about that right now? That's not the present issue. Of course you love each other today, but when we think too much in the future, that's where our fear comes from. And then we're operating and interfacing with our spouse from a place of fear instead of a place of courage and being really well grounded. So that comes from like being more mindful, being like, no, what do I need to work on today, right now, in this moment to strengthen my marriage? A lot of the adjustments that I see men make that have made great quantum leaps in their relationship have always been a series of little micro changes. in building intimacy in the relationship, not some big, expensive, huge thing.
What might a micro change look like? Or what would just one micro change be?
It would be not depending on your spouse for validation, for sexual validation, was probably one example. So many men who really like sex will look for sex as a way to make them feel okay about themselves or okay about their relationship. So the meaning of sex shifted away from connection and pleasure and oneness to more of it fills my bucket. You know how like a good run or a good night's sleep or a good meal or reading a book, talking to a friend, these are all things that we can do to fill our reservoir. And sex can fill that reservoir too. Mm-hmm. But when we depend on sex to fill that reservoir and we look to our spouse as the only legitimate person that can fill it, therefore, wife, you have this duty to help me feel good about myself. So she becomes his drug dealer in a way or whatever. And then he starts buying sex from her by like, maybe if I do the dishes, she'll have sex with me. If I remind her that I'm working and paying the mortgage and paying groceries. So you need to do your wifely duty to, you know, compensate. All of a sudden you're shifting the meaning of why you're engaging sexually. It's no longer about the connection of pleasure. It's turned into something to prop up your ego.
Yeah.
But those are things that probably started early in the marriage, kind of like the tree grew in the wrong direction and now it's like leaning big. So it's like reining that in and like figuring out really what it is. So the micro adjustments there is looking for ways to self-validate, to self-soothe, instead of looking to your spouse as the responsible party to make you feel good about yourself through sex alone.
Yeah, that's really great. I love that you brought up not being so outcome driven. You know, I think that's one key for any couple, even if you have a great sex life right now, if you can just kind of take that out of the mix and just enjoy the moment, like you're saying. And I, of course, loved that you brought up mindfulness, because that's, you know, one of the best tools we know of at this point to kind of help us slow down and pay attention to what it is we're doing right now. How does this touch feel? How does this connection fill our bucket, our soul? You know, I love that. That's great. Dan, thank you so much for this conversation. This has been so useful and inspiring, and I have learned many things that I'm going to write down and think about for a while. This is really wonderful.
Thank you. I love the chat too.
Well, thank you. And my guess is I will call on you again. We'll have to chat again about some other topic in the future.
I'd love it. I'd relish that. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Dan.
That's it for this week. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Sexual Mindfulness Project and subscribe to our website, shalomlevitt.com, to stay up to date with the latest information on sexual mindfulness. Thanks for listening.